Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You get a shiver in the dark, it's raining in the park, but meantime...
We're back, it's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Walter Olson. He's an old friend of ours. Walter is a law and a lawyer expert. He's an expert on the law and lawyers. He's with the Manhattan Institute. He's written a book called The Litigation Explosion, and the book I'm holding in my hand, which is a truly interesting book, folks, called The Rule of Lawyers, How the New Litigation Elite Threatens America's Rule of Law. Walter Olson, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Jim. Thanks for having me back on.
It's good to have you back. Walter, you know what? Today is an important day in terms of the law and the law that we have today, which was passed down from the common law of England, and that's today is the anniversary of the Magna Carta.
Yeah.
How about that?
And that's
1215, by the way. That was the date was 1215, June 15th in the 1215. How about that?
I think Ronald Reagan would make a joke about remembering it, but I can't do that. And it reminds us, you know, I'm going to say some things that are very critical of our legal system, but it reminds us that, you know, that there is an important point there, too, for why we want to have a well-functioning legal system is because keeping the courts independent, is something that we take for granted, you usually achieve, and many other countries not so. So when the law works well, it's a reason for gratitude.
Right. Well, the you know, and then when you look back on all the different documents, well, first, I actually give I think it was Henry II in the century before the Magna Carta, who I actually give credit for getting this whole thing started. He did it for his own self-interest. He came up with a system of laws that wound up replacing such useful methods as trial by ordeal. But then along came the Magna Carta, and then we had later on a lot of different things that happened, like the Petition of Rights, and then England, as you know, actually had the first Bill of Rights that our Bill of Rights was fashioned after. So
yeah, and ours went on to greater things. And,
of course.
They now, I think, have reason to envy ours. But if you go back, most of these things were forged in very hot struggles where people were playing for life and death stakes, and where the eventual rights that we got were kind of forged as a hard-won thing. People suffered some abuse for so long that finally they made it clear that the government couldn't do such and such a thing.
Right, exactly. And of course, the United States has one of the greatest legal systems in the world, but it's not perfect, is it, Walter? Therein lies your profession.
Yeah, that brings us to our topic this morning, because it falls painfully short of perfection for many people who get caught up in civil lawsuits. And the outcomes are slow, and they are often random, and they are sometimes very unjust. And it's also we are known as the most litigious of the advanced industrial democracies, and the question is what we are getting in exchange for paying so much more to our legal profession and putting up with so much more friction and unpleasantness. I fear that often it is not very much at all. Although we sue over accidents more, we don't manage to get a lower accident rate in most areas than a country like Canada or New Zealand or whatever. We sue much more over a lot of the other relationships of life, but it's not clear that we get better outcomes. And that is in part, I think, because we have a set of legal procedures that needlessly encourages litigation, that takes disputes which would have been settled earlier if they went on in one of these other countries, settled for some rational sort of outcome and encourages people to invest in fighting them on both sides.
Well, now, let me ask you a chicken or egg question, Walter. Are we more litigious because of the type of people we've become, or because we have a system that helps us to be that way?
That question is one of the first ones that fascinated me about this, because what you hear is, oh, well, we have a litigious kind of culture or population, and Americans are just that way, and Canadians just aren't, and you know, don't blame the rules. It's the fault of the people. And I certainly agree that after a certain point, when people have been brought up, let's say, in as students or parents in a school system, to you know, threaten, I'm going to bring in my lawyer if my kid doesn't get fair grades and that
right.
sort of thing, then it takes on its own kind of momentum and spreads to other people. But I really argue that the rules are terribly important, and if you took Canadians, who generally have a much lower litigation rate, and you gave them the American set of rules, and you waited a generation, you would probably wonder why it was that they were so litigious, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actually, you see that experiment in progress to some extent, because Canada, it's very hard to resist if you are in a country like there, or Britain, or Australia, or other examples. The American law reviews circulate among their legal profession, and the American lawyers are always visiting. And so they have all changed their legal procedures to some extent to Americanize them, and all of those English-speaking countries have gotten a much higher rate of litigation in recent years as a result.
Well, one of the things that, where I think it stems from, is in the 20th century, somehow the mantra arose, you know, somebody ought to do something about this. The government, I was at a meeting yesterday, and somebody came up to me. I gave a couple of speeches yesterday at this place, a speech and a breakout session. And somebody came up to me and asked me about something I talked about, and said something about, well, I think the government ought to get involved in this. And the person just wasn't too happy, because I didn't think that was a good idea. I said, well, you know, I said I think when the government gets involved, that's when we got problems. But my point is we look to the government. Somebody says, why doesn't the government do something about this? Because this is wrong. And then when they figure out that the government can or won't do it quickly enough, then somebody says, well, why don't we just call a lawyer? And to me, that seems like the wellspring of this whole thing. And that arose in the 20th century in America. We're going to be right back with our good friend Walter Olson. He's the author of The Rule of Lawyers, now available in paperback. We're going to tell you where in just a few minutes. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, celebrating Magna Carta Day with the author of The Rule of Lawyers, Walter Olson. And Walter, I'm looking at a list here that I found in an old article that I wrote, just to tick off some of these things. The Magna Carta was in 1215. Then following that was the Bail Act of 1444. The next big thing was the Petition of Rights, which I mentioned, in 1628. Then the Habeas Corpus Act. You know, we got that from England, and that was 1679, and then their Bill of Rights, which was 1689. So we are now the beneficiary of really almost 1,000 years of law that's really been developed since. As I said, I go back to the 12th century with my research in terms of Henry II, but what we've come to, Walter, is a situation where it's sort of gotten a little bit out of hand. Now, I wanted to ask you, oh, by the way, before we go any further, I do want to mention again that your book, is the Rule of Lawyers, is now available in paperback, isn't it?
It just came out in paperback and should just be arriving at better bookstores or available on the Internet, of course.
Give us a little bit of a tour of your book, and just to give us a little bit of an idea for those who may not be familiar with it, what they'll find when they pick up your book.
Well, I take a look in this book at the big lawsuit campaigns that go on against whole industries, and so naturally the tobacco litigation, the lawsuits against the gun manufacturers, which were trying to achieve gun control through other methods. They couldn't get it passed in the legislature, so they decided to sue for gun control. And asbestos, breast implants, these all have some common features. They are increasingly run by lawyers, and the clients are just, if not an afterthought, at least the clients are not in much control of the litigation.
And in some cases, the clients really don't get any money.
Well, this is one of the themes with the class action format, of course, is that the clients may never even hear that the case went on, and the lawyers cut a deal, which is very good for the lawyers, and brings the clients, if anything, the change you might find under your sofa cushions. The problems with class actions, much debated in Washington, a lot of talk about how best to fix it, restraining coupon settlements. You know, some say if the customers are going to get coupons, maybe the lawyers should get coupons for their fees too.
that would certainly curtail the lawsuits. But now it's going to be available wherever books are sold, right? In paperback, probably this week.
In better bookstores, and it should already arrived within the last couple weeks at a lot of bookstores. If you don't see it, ask for it, because most booksellers are delighted to place a special order and can get their hands on it pretty quickly.
And that's Walter K. Olson, O-L-S-O-N.
Exactly.
Walter, by the way, and you're with the Manhattan Institute. Give us that website.
Uh-huh. That is, I believe, manhattan-institute.org.
Okay.
And I run my own website, overlawyered.com, which specializes in excesses of the legal system.
I'm glad you reminded us of that. Overlawyered.com. Can they find out about your book there, too?
Every few days I put on a little blurb.
Okay, good. Let's talk about politics a little bit with regard to the lawyer situation, the lawyer issue. I've been predicting, this is no big surprise to me, because I've been predicting that that Edwards was going to be the nominee for vice president. I didn't think he'd be the nominee for president, but I believe that whoever was, you know, that he was going to wind up being that, because the Democrats are going to want to groom a good-looking young guy to be the president one day, and I think it's smart for them to do that. But one of the things the guy brings to the table is what he thinks is an advantage, but I don't think so, and that's his plaintiff lawyer background. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that was a good prediction of yours, because certainly the latest political gossip has it that Edwards is the front runner for the vice presidential slot. And the he certainly sees it as an advantage, and you can see how some of the rhetorical skills that you bring into a courtroom make people believe that you're a regular guy, make people feel sympathy in the one direction, get them angry at the people that you're fighting. These work very well as campaign skills, and so it's not surprising, especially when running for things like the U.S. Senate, where you get to be in kind of a permanent campaign mode anyway, and there's not a lot of details of running a state government or something, the trial lawyers have done very well at going into politics via that route. I might mention that probably the other potential vice president who is most often mentioned, the governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack, also used to be a plaintiff's trial lawyer. Mm-hmm. So there's kind of a door A and door B effect. You get a trial lawyer either way. But the at the same time, Edwards is a polarizing figure, and if anything is going to cause doctors to get into politics, they are so angry at some of the problems with the medical malpractice system, and Edwards specialized in lawsuits against obstetricians over babies with brain damage.
The trial lawyers have assaulted the medical industry, the medical practice.
Well, it would be one thing if the doctors were convinced that it was only the bad doctors getting sued.
Right.
I meet doctors all the time, and 99 out of 100 of them are convinced you are in danger, not so much based on how skillful you are, but what specialty you're in. If you deliver babies, if you do neurosurgery, you are in the crosshairs, even if you're the best one in your state.
Walter, I'm going to have to end it there. Thank you for being here. Good job today. The book is called The Rule of Lawyers, out in paperback right now. Thank you, Walter, for being here. Good job today.
Great. My pleasure, brother.
Walter Olson, ladies and gentlemen. He'll be back. I will be, too, right after these messages with Ivan Meisner. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.